It's astounding how acute and sharp and focused and aware people are about their business and how completely detached most people are from the temple. So just apply that same zeal and intellectual curiosity to your body.
The power of asking is the most powerful thing that no one is really improving on or really getting started on. And that's available. There's no exclusivity on it. Everyone can ask.
Listening without love is empty sound, but listening with love is understanding.
What does it take to be an F1 driver?
Patience is one big thing, to control yourself, your emotions.
It does take patience. You know, if we're not an expert day one, we're like, it's too hard. It's like, no, it's day one. Give it some time.
What would you say that you've learned that would be applicable to the everyday person?
You can have a great career, but a short one if you don't take care of yourself. Finding that limit is really important.
It really does feel like at the center of this philosophy is love.
Because life and love are one unit.
When you lose confidence in yourself, which you will by not having a routine and breaking little tiny promises to yourself, now you can't exude confidence and authenticity to the outside world. When you started your business, you probably didn't know what an income statement was, a balance sheet, a P&L, right? And now you do. And you understand all of these details about your business, and you're really good at it. So apply the same thing to your body. Maybe you've never heard of hemoglobin A1C. You don't know that that's the three-month average of your blood sugar. Maybe you don't know what DHEA is, but that's okay. There's a few biomarkers. You could educate yourself and, hey, these are kind of the parameters of what's going on in my body. If I want to operate a business, I know I got a top line, I deduct my cost of goods sold, you know, and then I've got to pay taxes. So we start to understand what are the metrics that are important to the success of this business. You can do the same with the human body. Some basic metrics, you know, your hormones, your lipids, you know, your nutrient deficiencies, what's called a CBC, a CMP, you know, my liver function, kidney function. There's certain basics, and you could, not to practice medicine, but you could understand what these basics mean to your future, just like you understand how your balance sheet, your P&L, and your income statement are needed. That data is needed to operate your business. And it's astounding how acute and sharp and focused and aware people are about their business and how completely detached most people are from the temple, right? Which is, this is way more important than your business. This is the only vehicle you have, and it's going to get you and your family and the world you're trying to touch and your product or service and everything else where it needs to go. So this should really come first. So just apply that same zeal and intellectual curiosity to your body, gamify your health a little bit, and you can entirely change the, I say it all the time, the trajectory of your life.
I can imagine a lot of entrepreneurs and business people just heard that message loud and clear. You know, you've been talking quite a bit about your optimal health work that goes this way, I mean, towards others. How about the work that you do towards yourself? I mean, how are you practicing this? What are your routines, your rituals that you find are the most powerful for you?
So this might sound very selfish, but I give the first 90 minutes of every day to myself. And I am absolutely resolute about that. I'm resolute about self-care. My wife teases me about it all the time. So, I schedule flights and meetings around, exercise and sleep. I don't schedule, my sleep and my exercise around meetings and flights and other commitments. I mean, I have an enormous mission in this world. I believe this is God's calling for me. It's my passion. I know that this is my purpose, and it's easy for me to get consumed. So when I wake up in the morning, I mean, I have a very exact routine that I go through. I'm happy to share it with you. So I wake up in the morning, I splash water on my face, I brush my teeth, and I immediately walk over and I get into a cold plunge. I have a cold plunge in my, outside of my master bedroom. And I kind of use the David Goggins method, which is like, if you know David Goggins, you can solve anything with massive action. And so I stand at the edge of it, and I used to negotiate with myself. Now I don't, because I would say, well, maybe I should get my coffee first. Maybe I should do this. So I walk in there and get straight into a cold plunge. For the record, you could also do it with a cold shower. I'm going to tell you my routine. I'm going to tell you how you could do what I do for free. So I get out of the cold plunge, I dry off, I put shorts on, and in the next room I have a treadmill, and I get on a treadmill and I walk for 3 minutes, sprint for 30 seconds, walk for 3 minutes, sprint for 30 seconds, walk for 3 minutes, and sprint for 30 seconds. I'm done at 10 and a half minutes, but I'm using a Hypermax oxygen. I actually put an O2 mask on and I'm breathing 95% O2. This is called multi-step oxygen therapy, or EWOT, exercise with oxygen therapy. Fascinating research done by Otto Warburg on this and just the benefits for human beings. So now maybe 15, 20 minutes into my morning, I walk down the hall, I get into a red light bed for 10 minutes, a Theralite 360 red light bed. Then I have coffee and I go outside and I do 8 minutes of breath work. And then on the days that I'm working out, that's when I head to the gym. And it's simple. It sounds like a lot. It's three or four things all lined up in a row. I can tell the days that I do it and the days that I don't, but I expose my body to cold. I breathe oxygen on a treadmill. I get in a red light bed for 10 minutes. I have coffee. I do breath work. I'm only 30 minutes into my day at that time, and it's easy to go right down to the gym. And then by the time, you know, I'm back up from the gym, an hour later, I shower and I start my day. And I do that religiously every day. And when I travel, the one thing that is always, always, always consistent, never, ever, ever, ever miss, can't emphasize it enough, is I do 8 minutes of breath work within 30 minutes of waking every single day. I will miss a commercial flight not to miss breath work. It resets your circadian rhythm. If I can, I expose my skin to sunlight at the same time. If you actually just make little promises and keep little promises to yourself, it is amazing what it will do for your confidence level, your self-esteem, because most of us will do things to ourselves that we don't do to the outside world. We'll say, hey, I'm going to go to bed at 10 o'clock tonight. I get in bed at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to go to bed at 10 o'clock tonight now. I get in bed at 11:30. I'm going to work out the first thing tomorrow morning. I get up, I get on my phone, I miss the workout. You keep breaking promises to yourself. And that is the most detrimental thing for our psyche. When you lose confidence in yourself, which you will by not having a routine and breaking little tiny promises to yourself, now you can't exude confidence and authenticity to the outside world. And you pay a price for that.
There's 3,100 billionaires on the planet.
Whoa.
Which is not that many. So if you want to meet one and learn from one, that's a really great cheat code of life. And they're accessible. And so taking a step back around interviewing billionaires on our YouTube channel, and then myself running almost $100 million a year business at AppSumo.com, it's the power of asking is the most powerful thing that no one is really improving on or really getting started on. And that's available. There's no exclusivity on it. So the upside of asking is unlimited, and the downside is a moment of discomfort. And so everyone can ask. You know, I have people come to my house all the time. I have a multi-million dollar house, which is insane. I used to have really cheap houses for pretty much 20 years. And no one asks me like what I do. Even my boxing coach, he comes over, or the gardener comes over, or the house cleaner comes over. I'm like, yo, what did you do to get this? And I just think more people should be doing that. And so with the YouTube channel, really, if you start asking people for things, you can start getting things. If you don't ask, you can't get. You're just going to get what you get. You're not going to get what you want. And what I mean by that is if you ask your dentist, like, hey, you did pretty well in school. How's it going for you? Do you have a wealth manager? Or if you see someone that owns a building, contact that building. Hey, I just want to know how you did this. And I think you'll be surprised what you can get and what you can learn, really, which is really interesting. So that's part one. The second thing with this YouTube channel from interviewing billionaires and millionaires is that there's so many different ways of getting rich. I come from Silicon Valley. My stepfather's a software engineer. My father came to this country, didn't speak English. He sold copiers door to door. And I just kind of thought, okay, I love tech. I'm going to want to be an entrepreneur. I don't have a day job. That seemed risky to me. And I thought that everyone else you can only get rich on the computer and on these worldwide webs. I didn't know how to do it, but I thought that was the only way. And so through the YouTube channel, it's been so powerful and so special. There's Larry Janeski. He's making $600 million a year on basements. You have this lady, Jan, which I guess it's kind of funny. Her name is Jan. She does jam. She got rich selling strawberries. There's Michael Hudner, who did ships. There's Rafa and James, who did energy trading. Right? There's such a phenomenal variety of people that are getting rich outside of just computers. And I think that's so exciting to think about, hey, what is the area that I really like? Is it cooking? Is it doing landscaping? Is it computers? And the ability in that to create a lifestyle and a lot of money around areas that we're interested in. So those are definitely the two major takeaways. From the billionaire specifically, that I've gotten to interact with, I've worked directly for Zuckerberg, Dustin Moskovitz, Matt Kohler. These are all billionaires. Sean Parker, I've been around Peter Thiel a little bit. I think the two biggest kind of surprises, two or three of them, one, they didn't set out to become a billionaire. I've heard some of these other YouTubers like, I'm trying to make $1 billion. I was like, well, the billionaires I know never tried to. They just really cared about a problem. And yes, you can probably do it one way, but almost all the ones I've seen and worked with, which is more than most, have really just been interested in solving something that a billion people or a lot of people are interested in. Now, the second part of that, which is less talked about, is that most of them didn't get to become a billionaire or super rich for 20 years. And recognizing that and being like, okay, cool. If I can be patient and focus on longevity, I can become a millionaire, multimillionaire, maybe billionaire or beyond. And that's what it is with all these people. And lastly, all of them got rich on just one thing. I see a lot of people with day jobs. I had a horrible day job. It's great to have a horrible day job. Everyone should get one shitty day job and get fired at least once. Then you realize how good you have it. I'm like, thank God I don't have a boss. Thank God I'm not anyone's boss. I hope to never be. But all these people, specifically Zuckerberg, Warren Buffett, all these people really just did one thing. But everyone who has day jobs is like, I'm going to create 4 passive income streams and I'm going to do 50. I'm like, well, that's cool. But what the crumbs of the most successful people on the planet are just doing one thing. So I'm going to probably go over there and copy them. So for myself, it's like I just do AppSumo. This YouTube thing I spend about 5-10% of my time on. And AppSumo is software deals for entrepreneurs. And that's the thing I do. Everything else business-wise, besides that, I kind of lose money on, which is another funny story.
I mean, I feel like there's so much to unpack in that. I mean, even just where you started with questions, I think like you said, that's the skill that nobody talks about. But the power of that, like what that can do and the downside with being so negligible, like it's just... It's mind-boggling. And I think that patience thing, like just recently we interviewed Valtteri Bottas, F1 driver, and I asked him what the number one thing is that allowed him to get where he is. And he said patience. And I thought, you know, this is the fastest sport in the world, and he's saying patience. Like, it's just like, you know what I mean? Like, it's that thing where if you just try hard for a long time at one thing, that can take you pretty darn far. Like, it's amazing to think about that power of compounding almost.
Yeah, I think people know these things. We all know it, but it's hard to do it. And it's been hard to do it for a very long period of time. So one of the past decade, let's call it, strategies is how to set less ambitious goals. You hear all these, like, I'd say fake entrepreneurs or fake coaches. They don't actually have any real businesses. They're like, you got a 10X today and you got a 5X. If you're not 5Xing, you're failing. And I was like, I've done that, but it's also interesting. What if our goals now for AppSumo.com is to grow 10% next year? And it's been that for quite a lot of time. And the reality is when you set less ambitious goals for yourself, you can stick with them for longer because you're not burnt out. You're not tired. You can sustain. And then by having less ambitious goals, you also have creative freedom because you're not stressed about hitting a target. And that gives you the ability to create 10X opportunities because you're like, okay, cool. I'm not worried about making money in that, but I can go do things that potentially, you know, be moonshots and really drive the company for the future.
Yeah, it's interesting that like even just that goal setting, because it is pretty counterintuitive. I mean, there's that idea of, you know, shoot for the moon or shoot for the stars. I mean, wherever you land, you're happy with it, right? I mean, it feels like...
I think the moon's further than the star. No, stars are further than the moon. Right. Shoot for the stars.
Whatever it is that's really big out there.
I'm on Earth, dude. I'm not trying to go out there. I don't know how these people want to go to Mars. Send them out there. Leave me to Earth. I'll take it.
It's that longevity game that just feels like if you can do this for a long time.
Yeah, there's not enough credit given to people that make good decisions consistently over long periods of time. I remember, you know, I worked for Zuckerberg directly. And the crazy part about business, this is kind of the craziest part. At the same time, you only need one hit, just one. So as long, you know, with Million Dollar Weekend in the book, one of the biggest breakthroughs for people is just getting started, because Zuckerberg really has done one thing. He started Facebook. That's it. Everything else he bought, nothing else that guy has come up with has been good. So if you think about that for choosing a husband or wife, if you could find one great one, you're done. And you got to keep working on it for a long period of time. But the same thing with business. Like, I tried 24 different businesses to finally get to AppSumo, to finally eventually get rich. Right? So yeah, you're swinging, but just one works. Awesome. But I think people don't swing enough. They don't even get started swinging. And that's, you know, they're not ready on the sidelines. And there's never a good time. The best time is right now. It's not yesterday because that passed. It's not tomorrow because you don't know. It's right now.
See, I've come up with what I call 5 L's. The first one is life and love. without life, there's nothing, you know. You can be a seed in the Great Pyramid for 5,000 years and nothing happens until love, which is light and water and so on, softens the shell and the light and the seed opens up and it grows. Life and love are one unit. They work together. It's like a pregnancy. When a mother is pregnant, she and that baby are one unit. What she eats, the baby eats. What she thinks, the baby thinks. It's a constant process. But that aspect of reality that is that baby that is being nurtured and grown within the womb doesn't really find its own identity until it takes its first breath. And then it becomes who it is. It takes the reason why it's coming into this earth. So it's this reality that life and love are one unit, and that as we work with each other that way, we can really understand aspects of ourselves, but aspects of the world around us and aspects of other people too.
You mentioned earlier that sometimes what gets in the way for people is we're scared, and also we don't understand our own power. I heard that at one point in your life growing up that you were called the class dummy. Now, obviously that's not true, but it sounded like it had a significant impact on you. What was happening for you at that time, and what did that help you learn?
Well, when I was, actually before I started school, I thought life was perfect because I was just running around with my parents helping with what they were doing and so on and so forth. But when I started school, I couldn't read. I couldn't, the figures, the nothing stayed still on a page. And so, we didn't know about a dyslexia. That was not a term that was identified who people like me were. But so I was the class dummy, and I flunked first grade, and I had to repeat first grade. And the teacher called me the dummy. You know, I had this deep soul wounding when I was in starting school. And fortunately, at home it was a whole different picture, but at school I just hated it. I was so afraid, I was so broken, I was so everything, until I started third grade. But my third grade teacher saw something in me that the other had not, and she appointed me class governor. And so I got to do things like take what we had done in our class and take it to the whole student body. I mean, I could talk, and I could tell stories, and I could do a lot of things like that, but I couldn't read, I couldn't write, I couldn't add, I couldn't subtract. I couldn't do school stuff. So, you know, I didn't really find my voice so that I could depend on it until I was 93. But that was in a dream that I found that out. I was constantly rechecking what I had written or what I had said, having somebody check, say, you know, is that okay? I was that damaged. But when I was 93, I had a dream that helped that.
So I'm thinking about you as a child with this experience at school that impacted you until you were 93. And obviously you had a large amount of career success, life success. And I think about the students who are feeling that way now. Maybe somebody's calling them the class dummy, or they're feeling like they're the class dummy. And it isn't true, but they're feeling that way. What's your advice if you could speak to those children?
Well, let me tell you what happened in consequence. When we started the American Holistic Medical Association, there were 10 of us sitting around, doctors sitting around a table, and as we got to talking, we realized that six of us were dyslexic. So what it did for us was say, well, that's why we are looking for something different, because I don't know how I learned to read. I don't know how I learned to do the things that I... But there are different ways of learning and practicing and doing things when we begin to look for different ways. And when everything has to be done with a certain protocol and so on, we're leaving a bunch of children, a bunch of people out of the mix, because some of the smartest people around on this planet are people who actually were in my category of being the class dumbbells, because what made sense to other people didn't make sense to me. That's why I had to go to the psychiatrist, you know? I mean, it was crazy stuff.
I got goosebumps as you said that. I feel like the way you described that, you know, looking back, you could then see how that challenge that you were working on when you were younger ended up being the strength that really allowed you to challenge the world and see things differently, learn differently through your whole life.
Absolutely.
You've had obviously like elite training for, you know, one of the highest intensity sports in the world. Most people won't have that in their life. But what would you say that you've learned through all of that that would be applicable to the everyday person?
Through the training.
Training or just life? Like, what do you think you've learned that would be really helpful for somebody who may not encounter, again, elite stuff, but just looking to make goals happen in their life?
I've definitely learned that sometimes I've overdone things. Like, I pushed myself too hard. In terms of my mental and physical capacity, I found my limits earlier on in my career. It was only 2014. I managed to get myself into this like overtraining syndrome. So just really, the whole body was like tired, stressed, not recovering anymore. I was training too much, eating too healthy or too little, let's say. And I found my limit. And that as well, that was pretty good eye opener mentally for me. Like, maybe I need to have something else sometimes than F1 if I want to have a long career. Because yes, you can have great career, but a short one if you don't take care of yourself. If you're burning the candle from both ends, it's not sustainable. So that's something I've learned, to find your own limits. Like, I would say in business, I'm pretty sure it's very common people, you know, go too deep. You know, they don't allow themselves to, let's say, sleep enough. You want to work longer hours, but at some point there's this line that it starts to eat you up and your performance goes actually down. So finding that limit is really important.
Have you gone through dark periods in the sport?
I have, definitely. Like, when I had this overtraining period, which totally to like recover fully from it, while I was still obviously racing actively, it was almost 2 years that I got to the same fitness than before. And at the same time, mentally, it was quite tough because I wanted to train. I wanted to, you know, feel good. And but yeah, so at the same time, eventually when... Yeah, like physically your body is on the limit or tired, you can always kind of deal with just mental strength, just push through and adrenaline. But at the same time, your mental reserves also start to go down. It's a bit like a battery. And I definitely hit that bottom and felt it was a good eye-opener for me that, okay, I need to figure something out and find a different way if I want to have a long career.
Which you have. I mean, it's still going, and I think there's years still ahead. But the thing with sports, what's interesting is that Father Time never stops, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is your career. You've got, you know, a certain amount of years. How do you balance when, I mean, I'm guessing that in your DNA is to win. How do you balance your ambition with results when they're not where you want them to be?
Yeah, it's not easy because naturally you always want to win everything. That's been in me since a child. But you got to understand this sport. There's normally only one or two, sometimes three drivers that can realistically fight for the title and consistently be on the podium. That's how it goes, because you need to be in the right team, you know, right time. But I know the name of the game. Like, my first year in Formula One, we had not a great car. I was there pretty much at the back most times. Sometimes I think I only got once in the points in my first season. So yeah, and then next year things started to go better. But again, now, like example this year, 2023, it's been a challenge. But what motivates me is the future, because I still have my goals. I know that there's always ups and downs, and the main thing for me is to remind myself what I still want out of this sport, and that's still get closer to the top, eventually get back on the podium and even winning. So that is my motivation. When things are tough, I try to remind myself of those.
You know, so I started a company, you know, 9 years ago when I left the life insurance industry. It was called Streamline Medical Group at the time. We started treating a well-known billionaire in the United States named Grant Cardone, who ended up acquiring us, and we became the 10X Health. 10X was his brand. So he acquired us. We became 10X Health. You know, since then, we ballooned to, you know, 130, 140 employees, you know, offices all over the country, and a very strong medical team, clinical team. And I've had the blessing of training them, and they practice medicine. And so, you know, it's not inappropriate for me to share my research or ideas or trends or my opinions on things. It's very inappropriate for me to give medical advice. And so what I do is I try to train as many practitioners as will listen, and then they will go out and shift the way that they practice medicine, because they're looking at the human body in a whole new light. I also believe in freely giving of the information. I don't like give specific recommendations. I mean, that's the practice of medicine, but certain talking about human physiology and what kind of nutrients we can put back into the body that could possibly eviscerate a lot of these conditions that we have. You know, I don't say that I treat hypertension or treat hypothyroid or treat anxiety. What I say is you've been labeled with things you don't have. You know, you've been told you have ADD or ADHD. You have an inability to degrade neurotransmitter. You've been told that you have a sleep disorder. You can't downregulate catecholamines. You've been told you have anxiety. You have an overexpression of catecholamines. You've been told you have hypertension, but no doctor could get you the evidence of hypertension. All your diagnosis was normal. So maybe you have hyperhomocysteinemia, and you can lower that. So rather than say that I would, you know, I treat or cure disease, which would be a complete fallacy, I say, look, maybe you should look for the nutrient deficiencies in the human body, and you've been this mislabeled as having a pathology or disease that you might not have. And so I hope that that, you know, distinction comes across, because I certainly am not down on medicine or MDs or the people that actually put in the work to get the license that have actually earned the right to practice medicine. But most people got into medicine to do the right thing, and then they got into a system that didn't allow them to do that. So, you know, my company is becoming a platform for people that want to get out of that system and get into the optimal health system. And outside, we need an army of people to become citizen scientists and kind of take their journey of optimal health into their own hands. Understand a few biomarkers in your blood, a few genetic markers in your genome, and start to understand how I can actually use this data to improve, you know, the entire trajectory of my life. And that's what's going to be required, because we cannot leave that in the hands of modern medicine. Modern medicine is excellent at crisis management. But it is, you know, has proven not to be the best choice for, you know, in the search for optimal health, anti-aging, longevity.
I appreciate you sharing that and how you see your work and the distinction. I mean, it feels, you know, it was interesting. I mean, lots of it feels similar to what I was hearing from Dr. Gladys in terms of that awareness and that, you know, taking on the, I don't know, giving yourself permission to take ownership of your health in that regard and really pursue.
No question.
Yeah, it's powerful.
Do you believe everyone wants to be rich?
No, not at the deepest level, no.
No. We want to feel good about ourselves and proud of ourselves. And in this society, you know, maybe in the alien society it's different, but in this society we have determined that the exchange of value for money is how we're going to operate. And for 20 years I was just so obsessed with creating money and getting money. And I was not really obsessed at all in enjoying life and enjoying the money. And that's something when COVID happened that 180'd my life. And I'm grateful for it. it was definitely unfortunate for a lot of people. I was just grateful that it brought up, okay, well, if this is not forever, how do we enjoy this life? And so a lot of my learnings and what I do in our channel is to inspire people to be able to do their own things in business training. And that doesn't mean to be a millionaire. I will say with 100% certainty, being a millionaire is awesome. The ability to go to the grocery store and you're like, just give me the things I want, go to the supermarket and not worry paycheck to paycheck, not worry about it. Like, I actually instill more like, okay, I should wait more to buy things. Let's delay that gratification instead of just getting everything I want. When I go to these billionaires, one of my favorite questions is, how do you enjoy money, but what do you regret about the money? And almost all of them, they will say almost, they're either saying it or the what they're actually saying is that they regret not spending more time with their family. And only a very few were able to balance that. And that's something that stuck with me, where it's the reason I left San Francisco. I didn't want to talk about funding and employees and how big your company is. I don't care. I really, you know, what I'm interested in is like, how good is your life? Like, how are you with yourself? Not even necessarily you have to be this donor person. I think that's one way of a great life. How are you to your partner? How are you to your parents? How are you to your friends? How are you to the people you work with? And I think money is very sensitive. And I think we're taught a lot about how to create it, but I definitely think there's much more there as well, how to enjoy it and different things that people enjoy. Like, I enjoy watches and bicycles, and I enjoy having a nice house. I never did any of these things before, because I was like, I should just keep saving and saving and saving. And with COVID, I was like, maybe let me enjoy a little bit in the areas I'm spending a lot of time. And those are the areas. And then watches was also just, how can I represent pride in myself? Like, what I've accomplished in different areas. So, you know, me and my partner are pregnant. She's pregnant. I did the easy work, you know, and so I got a Rolex with me and two other buddies. I bought 3 Rolexes, Pepsis, to honor that. And that's super cool that I can do that for us and for them. And money enables that. Would I be just as happy without it? Yeah. But I would say having money to be able to have a nicer house, be able to have a house, you know, live in Spain without worrying about the money and these types of things, it makes life so much easier.
If we can understand that you take what you have and you use what you have and make the most of it. And that's the kind of lesson that my mother taught me. She said, her statement was, well, just make do. And it's been such a helpful thing. You take what you have and you make do.
Wow, Dr. Gladys, so you're young, have this experience. It's scarring to a certain extent. It helps you kind of shape who you are over time, but you then find your voice at 93. I'm thinking about all the people out there who feel like there's something they're hanging on to that feels like a scar. They're looking for their voice. How do they find it? How did you find it?
I've paid attention to my dreams. Dreams very often gave me the answer, or I paid attention to what actually was working in my life, or something that called me. But it was a dream that gave me the answer to it, because, you know, I was asking people to help me with stuff all the time. But I had this dream when I was 93. I woke up singing and laughing. But I was kind of in the dream and kind of out of the dream. And when I realized what I was doing, I saw myself as 9-year-old Gladys coming out of the tent that the family was in the jungles of North India. And I was going to do something that we weren't supposed to do in our family on Sunday mornings. And I knew that in the dream that it was a Sunday morning. And that was sing anything but hymns and bhajans on Sunday mornings. I mean, that was what we were supposed to do. And I thought it was a stupid rule. And I was going to not do that. And I knew I was breaking the rules. So I was checking out under the tent flap. And my brother wasn't there, because he would have reported me, then I'd have been in trouble. So I ran up to a mango tree and ran to the top of the mango tree. And I'm sitting in that mango tree and I'm singing any old thing that I wanted to sing. I was singing Caterpillar song and all that kind of stuff. And but then I got to thinking, well, you know, maybe you don't know every year. So I began to doubt. And I looked over my right shoulder, and Jesus was up in the tree with me. Now, I looked over and I said, and he was laughing. And I said, Jesus loves the little children, right? And he says, yes. So then I go back to my singing, and then I think, did he really say yes? And so I look back over my shoulder, and I say, I'm still a little children, right? And he said, yes. So I went back to my singing, and that's when I woke up singing and laughing. And I realized that what was I talking about? If Jesus accepted me, for crying out loud, maybe my voice was worth something. And so after that, I stopped doubting the words that were coming out of my mouth that I thought were real and were really important. But the dreams have been huge in my understanding of who and what I am.
It sounds like it speaks to the power of that idea that healing comes from within.
I've been around enough sports to know what that feeling's like when somebody gets injured or gets into a crash. I guess something happens and the sport slows down for those few minutes and then you got to go right back up. Mm. How do you maintain focus when something hard happens, big crash, and then you got to go back in? Is that a challenge for you?
It is a challenge, but it's important skill in this sport, whether we're talking about small mistake or a big mistake. Let's say on a qualifying lap, the first corner, you have this little bit of a lockup of the tire, you know, you lose the line a bit. You have to be able to forget that immediately, because if you keep thinking about it, that I need to recover it in the next corners, that's your lap done, ruined. Nothing good will come out of it. So it's a certain skill that you need in this sport to be able to deal with those mistakes, whether it's a small or big one. And I think in that thing for me, what's the most important is to be like self-honest and accepting it. Okay, yeah, I messed up. And what's the best thing next that I can do? Usually it is to understand the mistake, why it happened, how can I prevent it from happening again, and then move on. Then don't look back.
And are those thoughts going through your head even at that speed? Or is this like after the when you kind of stop the car, or are you self-reflecting while you're driving?
Maybe like on a qualifying lap, not that big analysis, like because you don't have time. But you just try to kind of just shake it off and just continue with the lap, driving to the limit, but not over the limit. Just keep doing as you were imagining before that you would do the lap. And just, but then afterwards, analysis is so important, because otherwise you do the same mistake again, and that would be very silly.
I would say that everyone should be an entrepreneur, everyone, because if you get fired today, what's your backup plan? Go on Indeed.com and pray. Like, having an entrepreneurship where you can have your own business, and if you start it right now, not how, you just get started. And that, a lot of what we cover that is exactly $1 million weekend. You could do it in a weekend, which everyone has. They can change their life in 48 hours. You have the option. And a lot of people, let's take AppSumo.com. We have a lot of people who have very successful side businesses and they're happy with their day jobs. And that's great. And there's other people like myself that were always frustrated having a day job. And so I wanted to create work that I didn't have to work at. And I do believe there's a misconception, and something that most people get wrong, is that you can't do what you enjoy or passion or dream about and make a lot of money doing it. I don't believe that.
This is interesting, because I was starting to wonder, as I was looking into your story, why YouTube? Like, you've already had success. You've already done lots of things. If you wanted to ride off into the sunset, like, you've already figured that out. So why pour your time? And I'm hearing it, you know, it's 10% of your time, but why pour it into sharing this message with other people? I'm fascinated by that choice.
Yeah. I like it. That's it. You know, I've been doing social, not social necessarily. It wasn't even social back then. It was just alone media, solo media since 2000. And I love it. I love putting material out there, generally around starting businesses. I love who it connects me with. Because I'm social and putting myself public, I can meet all these really interesting people. And whether you're getting going or you're established, you can get that you can make that happen. I even connect probably more than people would expect with up-and-comers. I call them pre-fluencers. I just love connecting with people who are the next generation, because that's where I get to learn from. And Yeah, I talked to my wealth advisors this year, and they're like, you know, you never have to work again. And you get $20,000 a month for the rest of your life. And I was like, when am I dying? Is this next year or is this longer? You guys want me to die soon? Like, no. You can live, you know, let's say 80, 90. I was like, oh, I'm going to try to live to it forever, but let's take 100. And I think that's a great way to approach life. Where if you didn't have to work, what do you want to work on? And my days are pretty much set like that. Where mornings I don't do shit till 12. So I can work or I can do nothing. A lot of times I read, journal, hang out with my girlfriend, play pinball. I got an arcade upstairs, which is awesome. It's unbelievable. We should all feel lucky. By the way, whether you're super rich or low rich or starting rich, like if you zoom out of your lives, it's awesome. You can breathe. You have hot water. You have microwaves. Like our lives are so much better than we, and this is something I struggled with for 20 years. That's why I'm sharing the message that our lives are so much better than we realize. And that sucks. If you're small rich, I don't like saying poor, small rich. Then you're like, oh, well, I'm not rich yet. And it's like, well, just take a step back and how's everything really going? Just take an evaluation. You're healthy. You can walk. You can use a toilet. You can pick up your pants. Like there's a lot of good things going on. And so coming forward with that, if you don't have to work, what do you want to work on? And then how do you create some money out of doing that? And eventually, yeah, I get paid promoting deals at great prices that I can use myself. That's great. And the same thing goes with YouTube where, yeah, there wasn't a thing where I want to build a brand and I need a bigger ego. I think one of the most powerful things that we can all work on is how do we have enough? And for me with YouTube, it was just like, I got excited to put out videos and I didn't do it with a videographer. I didn't do it in a studio. I did it with my camera shirtless. Right. And I'm not trying to be like Mr. Beast and be the world's biggest YouTuber or be Zuckerberg and be a billionaire. I'm trying to be Noah Kagan. And everyone should figure out how to be themselves. And so being myself, I like making content. I like getting to meet John Paul DeJoria. I like trying to do some stupid challenges. Sometimes I like doing them, sometimes I don't. I'm always proud of myself afterwards. And it's something that I get excited connecting with the audience and seeing them be inspired in their own journeys. And it's just been a great process. So now, you know, I talked about $1 million weekend. If people are interested in that, getting going now and how do you stick law of 100, do 100 videos and then you can quit. And what happens after 100, you're like, maybe I don't want to quit. And that's what I did. And for myself now, and this is what we talked about with billionaires early on, I'm trying to do 10 years of content. So I want to do this for 10 years. Most, if you ever see like content creators, most of them give up really early. They give up after like one video. Or the super popular people give up after three years. Or maybe they're like, I was tired of making videos for others. It's like, well, start making videos for yourself. And I'm really excited about the content we make. You know, we're trying to, today I saw that the In-N-Out founder is this woman. I'm like super excited. Or Sheila Johnson, the founder of BET. I'm like, oh, that's super cool. Let's go talk to her. Can we make that happen? I want to talk to Dave Portnoy. Guy's a psycho. Seems super interesting. And by the way, you know, I have these dreams. We have these visions of who we want to meet. And it takes a lot of time in sticking with it and persisting, you know, with asking and asking and asking, just like I teach in the book, to eventually get them. And at the end of the day, if people want to think about what they want to do with their lives, you know, we ask about YouTube. What do you want to work on for free? Work on it really hard. And no matter what, if the outcome's not you're a trillionaire, you're getting a lot of views or no views, generally you're pretty proud of yourself. And I look at our videos over the past 2 years, I'm like, damn, I'm proud. I'm just proud of our team. I'm proud of the customers and audience that likes to enjoy our content. So one thing that anyone could do right now, go to your phone and just scroll down 2 years and look where you were. And every time people do that, they'll be like, holy shit, I'm so much better than I was. And I like that with my YouTube stuff where I look 2 years ago, I'm like, oh, that was cool. And I'm really proud of where we are now. And it's exciting to think where I'll be in the next 2 years.
Because everything that a human being experiences about energy, everything that you call energy is nothing more than oxygen in your blood. If you told me, Gary, I had a lot of energy today, physiologically, what you're saying is I had a lot of oxygen in my blood today. So if oxygen equals energy, which it does, then if I want to raise your energy level, I have to improve the oxidative state of the blood. One of the reasons why no human being has ever woken up laughing is because you don't have the oxidative state in deep sleep to come out and experience laughter. Can you wake up angry? Yes. You know, in fact, you want to do a fun little experiment tonight. Just pinch your spouse while they're in a deep sleep. They will instantly wake up angry, right? Because anger, jealousy, despair, resentment, these emotions do not require oxygen. You can be in a deep sleep and instantly wake up angry. So because it's so these are readily available emotions. So if we can just improve the nutrient deficiencies in the human population and get hormones to improve and get oxygen up in these bodies, we can literally improve the mood of humanity. I know that sounds a bit far-fetched, but I mean, that's really kind of my mission in life, is to just get the message out there to people that, listen, you are not as sick or as pathological or as diseased or as dysfunctional as you think you are. You may be a few nutrients away from being the most optimal person that you ever imagined.
I think that line around, you know, how much energy do I have today, and that's directly related to your oxygen, I think that's just so, I mean, people can grab hold of that. It makes so much sense in terms of...
Yeah, I mean, that's what we call a runner's high. I mean, that's why people love cold plunges. That's why people love... what's happening in a cold plunge, right? You got a peripheral vasoconstriction. Where's all that blood go? To the core and to the brain. Liver, lungs, pancreas, kidneys, and up to the brain. So what's actually happening? You're getting an artificial concentration of oxygen up to the brain. What's the brain do? Releases endorphins, pleasure hormones, dopamine, which lasts 6 to 8 hours. You know, cocaine lasts 9 minutes, right? So, and cocaine's very expensive and will end up killing you, right? And a cold plunge is, you know, in a cold shower is free and will change the trajectory of your life. But people don't want to do it because aging is the aggressive pursuit of comfort. You know, I tell people there are 4 things that you could do for free that would entirely change the trajectory of your life. And you could start doing these tomorrow because, you know, we were meant to spend 85% of our time outside as human beings. That's how we were engineered and ancestrally. And we now spend more than 95% of our time indoors. We regulate everything, our lighting, our temperature, our humidity, everything. And so if you started tomorrow doing 4 simple things, a few days a week, taking your shoes off and contacting the surface of the earth. Earthing and grounding is a very real thing.
Like walking on the surface of the earth is what you're saying.
Yes, but I'm talking about dirt, grass, sand, right? Not pavement or, you know, concrete pavers, not walking outside on the balcony of your condo. I'm on the 30th floor of a condo right here. If you don't have a PEMF mat or want to invest in a PEMF mat, which is about $5,000, for free, you can take your shoes off, you can contact the surface of the earth. Earthing and grounding is a very real thing. Human beings build up a charge. When we build up this charge, we discharge into the earth. You want to change the polarity in the body, right? We talk about pH, potential hydrogen, being acidic or basic. If you want to shift the pH of the body, you don't drink alkaline water. That's the biggest marketing myth ever sold to the public. You contact the surface of the earth. You run a low Gauss current through the surface of the earth. The surface of the earth is magnetic. It has a low Gauss current.
What's the hardest lesson you've learned?
I mean, at the time, it was about a 10-year depression, is that everyone's replaceable. I was grateful to learn that early on in my life. That was a very hard lesson to learn, that we all think that we're special and that, you know, if you have a day job, that can be taken away from you. And I lived with 6 people. My phone was Facebook. My friends were Facebook. And to have that all removed, to go back, I worked at Intel before and I moved back in on my friend's couch who worked at Intel, and I felt really ashamed. And that was the moment. I would never again let that happen.
Do you have any career regrets?
Career regrets. Only thing I would say is I was too hard on myself in my first 2 years at Mercedes. I really couldn't accept the fact that I didn't win the title in those early years because I wanted it immediately. And I definitely made my life more difficult by just being too harsh on myself. So if I would have given myself a bit more time, maybe I could have found that flow a bit easier. But apart from that, no regrets, because the main thing is when I look in the mirror, I know that I've done everything that I could. Like, I've given everything. I've just always tried everything, always tried to find something more and be the best version of myself. Like, yeah, sometimes it's good times, sometimes bad times, but I'm sure it's made me tougher. Mm.
Sounds like you kind of had this confidence that's really been with you through your career. You know, just hearing the way you describe it. Have you ever lost your confidence?
Yeah, I have. I haven't in my career many times. And I think probably the worst one was 2018, which was my second year at Mercedes. The whole season just didn't quite start well. And I started a bit over trying, and then eventually there was a bit of a gap between me and Lewis in the points, and I just became to having to be in the support role and to accept that. That was really eating my confidence, because of course I wanted to be there to win and, you know, do things my way. But yeah, having to be in that support role, that was hard to accept, and definitely lost the confidence, especially towards the end of the year, to a point that that winter I was this close of retiring from the whole sport and to walk away from F1.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so that was pretty deep. And now when I look back at it, it almost looks and feels a bit like silly. But when you're in your thoughts and, you know, not in a good mindset, yeah, things can be tricky.
I think a lot of people will hear that and will feel that in themselves, that they've had a moment, maybe they're in that moment where their confidence is low and it feels like they're trapped. What would you say to somebody who feels trapped with their confidence?
It's easier to say than do it, but looking at the big picture in life, you know, that always helps. But sometimes you might need somebody to help you. You know, in sports, and I think in business, it's very common, or at least should be common, to have outside help, like mental coaches or, sport, what's the word, psychologists and stuff like that. Sometimes you might need help, or a very good friend that you can speak with and, again, get that sense of the big picture in life, like, okay, things are good. And yeah, just like, yeah. But also for me, what worked was a good reset. And that way I could really find that joy of the sport again. So early January, I got back to Finland, which I normally try to spend a bit of time in January because it's beautiful winter. And yeah, I was still a bit like, I don't know, like kind of starting to feel better, but not fully. Then I decided to go alone, not with my partner, alone to have a walk in the forest, a bit of like a hike in the snow, which I sometimes do. But I felt like, you know, that could be nice, you know, get some fresh air and just be wander there myself alone 2-3 hours. And that's when I just found the confidence again. And all the things that I had achieved previously, like, you know, the wins I managed to still get to that point, the pole position laps, some good race results, all that just came to my mind. And I actually remember saying to myself, I'm the best in the world. Like, I had that much confidence, like, straight away. Like, I can do this. And yeah, then carried on. And the first race of the season, which was 2019 Melbourne, I won it by like 20 seconds. And that was just like almost like an outburst of energy and frustration from the year before. And yeah, that was actually a pretty cool moment.
You should always start businesses in your zone of influence, in the problems you're excited about, and see who you have access to make yourself easier for you to succeed. And so coming back from my own journey, it was going and doing operations at Intel, which sucked. Then I did product management. I was like, oh, this is kind of okay, but I don't like, you know, working for someone else. Then I did marketing at Mint, even though I never did marketing before. And then I noticed that every time I'm doing things, it's really just like getting the word out about things I like. And that's available for everyone to figure out for themselves. So you can just think, what would I do for free tomorrow if I could do anything? Or if I have $10 million in my account, what am I going to do? And then just make that your career. And that's what my career is. And it took time to get there, though. And I think that, again, coming back full circle, it does take patience to find out the things we want to do. If we're not an expert day one, we're like, it's too hard. It's like, no, it's day one. Give it some time.
Yeah, that combination of get started and patience. I just think that's like ringing in my mind. You talked about Zuckerberg getting started, you know, on a weekend. What was it like? I mean, go back to the early days of Facebook. Like, what was like the thing that would shock us the most or kind of surprise us the most? Whether it's like actually shocking or just something about the experience that... What was it like back in Facebook?
I'm trying to think what would be most shocking. There's a lot of shocking things, but probably the most shocking was just how much conviction we all had about the mission. All of us, I don't know if I would kill people, but I would have gone to jail for a long time for Facebook. And that was everyone who was there. We were willing to kill for what we were doing. You know, we're not Navy SEALs. We're a bunch of tech nerds, you know, that can barely do nothing. And there's a lot of crazy stuff around it, but really, I would say what was most shocking is just how convicted we were about what we were working on. And I think that's something to think about for everyone. Like, do you care? A lot of people that work at AppSumo.com love entrepreneurship. They strongly believe that everyone can be an entrepreneur and we can provide accessibility through great software deals that anyone could buy a great tool to help them with their business. It doesn't need to be so prohibitive. And I think that that's, you know, anyone could copy that, whether it's in a, you know, restaurant, whether it's in a making candies, whether it's a software business, whether it's e-commerce, whatever that is, content. You know, if you look at some of the people who create content, that, like Mr. Beast, I will say, I give him a lot of credit for that. That guy loves making content. And there was crazy stuff at Facebook at the time. I mean, some of the crazy stuff. Zuckerberg was ahead of his time. And, you know, they paid for all of our parking tickets because he's like, I don't care. Like, it's more valuable for you to be at the computer than worry about where you parked. They just paid for all of our tickets. And he would do a lot of things like that where, you know, maybe the crazy part is like, what's really your goal and how are you really ignoring everything else? And if the goal is to get to 1 billion users, which was our goal, let's ignore everything else at all costs. So he did. They had free laundry. They paid for your housing if you lived within 5 miles. They paid for free tickets, free food, free drink, which was, it was early when, for people to do that. Now it's more common. But it was, how do we remove everything except what's important at all costs and no exception? And he was ruthless around that. I'd say the other thing that was probably most shocking, and I in your 20s especially, or if you have the ability, like, go be around excellence. Like, I was around the highest standard on earth, in specifically in business, at a very young age, and I feel very lucky to be there. Sean Parker, Peter Thiel, Mark Zuckerberg, Dustin Moskovitz, Mark Andreessen was an investor. The guys from Benchmark, who's it? Charlie Cheever, Andrew Bosworth, Adam D'Angelo, Naomi Glide. All these people are elite. Aaron Glebe, Saleo. Like, these people are the best in the world. And figure a way, whatever it takes, whatever it takes. This, again, we come back to resourcefulness, to be around that and understand what the standards can be. And there is something beautiful about how much higher that you can hold yourself to a higher standard, just understanding what levels of standards there are. And I'm talking standards of like how much they care about the font. The fact that Mark would go through the website and he'd find a link incorrect on the help section at 3 a.m. and send it to you. And you'd be like, all right, let me get that fixed right now.
When you put that helmet on, what's going through your mind? Or is there something going through your mind? Like, what's happening for you?
It's really focusing on the things that matter. So obviously anything outside, you don't really think about who's watching the race, who's present, what's happened the night before, how was the morning. You have no clue about that, what day of the week it is. Normally it's Sunday, but you know, those kind of things just doesn't matter. You're just focusing on one thing at a time, and sometimes obviously you have to focus on multiple things when you're racing. But example, before the race start, only thing you think about is that race starts procedure, good reaction to the lights. Then next thing is, yeah, the dropout phase, how quickly you get on power. Then is where to find the right gap. And it's just one thing after another. Like,
we talk about fear. Is it a factor for you?
In the car, never. Never. Like, it's only, I've only felt uncomfortable, and I don't know if it's fear or only if I've lost the control of the car, if I'm just about to crash. Let's say I've lost the back end of the car and I know that, okay, I'm going to that wall fast. that's uncomfortable, and that could maybe a bit of fear in there, like how much it's going to hurt. But while I'm in control, no fear at all. And I'm a terrible passenger. Like, if I'm an example, I've been in like ice rally car as a passenger of my girlfriend. That's horrifying, because when I'm not in control, then I'm not good.
No way.
But as long as I know that I have the control, all good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does it hurt in a crash?
Yeah, it hurts. Like, obviously the chassis, the car is super strong.
Yeah.
But that means the impact is always hard, you know, not much flexes. And I think my biggest crash was 52 G in terms of the impact. So it does hurt. Yeah.
Earthing and grounding can change the polarity in our cells. It will actually recharge the surface of our cells so they repel one another and are not oppositely charged and attracting to one another and sticking together. If you look at red blood cells under a microscope, when they get opposite charges, they attract. Everywhere they touch, you lose surface area. Now that cell cannot exchange with the outside environment. It can't eliminate waste, repair, detoxify, or regenerate. So touch the surface of the earth. That's the first thing we get from Mother Nature is magnetism. The second thing we get from Mother Nature is oxygen, right? We get oxygen from the air. And so it's about 21% O2 at sea level. So get outside in the morning and do 3 rounds of 30 deep breaths with a breath hold in between. Just get the oxygen in. Don't worry about whether it comes in through your nose or your mouth. The style of breath work that I personally use is one called Wim Hof. He deserves all the credit. His videos are free online all over the place. There's Wim Hof coaches all over the planet. You can go to my Instagram and I do breath work tutorial videos. Touch the surface of the earth, do 8 minutes of breath work, expose your skin to sunlight during the first 45 minutes of the day. Why is that important? Because first light is the most beautiful, beneficial light of the day. It has healthy blue rays of light. You will generate vitamin D3. You can actually take your shirt off and expose it to sunlight. There are no harmful UVA or UVB rays in the first 45 minutes of the day. And then when you're done and you're ready to shower, when you're done showering, take a cold shower for 60 seconds to 3 minutes. Now, there is a lot of fancy. I actually sell a protocol called the Superhuman Protocol. It's $150,000. It is a PEMF mat, a Hypermax oxygen system, and a red light therapy bed. You can spend $150,000 on that, or you could get every single one of those things for free by doing just what I said to do. Touch the surface of the earth, expose your skin to sunlight, learn to do a round of breath work, and take a cold shower. I mean, it is amazing what this does for human beings, this hormetic stress, filling the body with oxygen, changing our mood, elevating our emotional state, resetting our cortisol and our melatonin receptors with first light in the morning. There's enormous amounts of evidence on this. You know, using what God gave us in the natural circadian cycle of the earth and the sun in order to put us back into a healthy biorhythm and recharge us. We are photovoltaic beings. Sometimes we're indoors so often we go 6 days a week without even getting any sunlight on our skin. The truth is most of us are not getting enough sun, not that we're getting too much. And so the simple things that we can do like that, getting tap water out of your life for good. You know, I'm not drinking chlorinated or fluoride laden water. You know, I don't know whose idea it was to take fluorosilicic acid, the byproduct, the waste product from phosphate fertilizer production, and put it into our drinking water under the guise that it's good for our teeth. That is the most absurd thing I've ever seen. In fact, if you look at the back of a toothpaste label, it even says that if you swallow this toothpaste to contact poison control immediately. Why don't I contact poison control every time I have a glass of tap water? You know, so I should get tap water out of my life. So simple changes that you can make, you know, non-GMO foods, getting tap water out of your life, avoiding seed oils, breath work, grounding, sunlight exposure, cold showers. None of these things will add a single dollar to your budget and could entirely change the trajectory of your life.
What are your habits and your routines and your rituals that have allowed you to stay so mentally and physically sharp?
Well, one thing was when I had this house built, I'd had my bedroom built upstairs, so I'd have to go upstairs every night to go to bed. And that's been a good thing. I go up and down my steps. It's been very helpful because I understand the importance of movement. I understand the importance of walk. I try very hard to walk 3,800 steps in my little house here with my walker, because I think it's very, very important to walk. I get up in the morning and I do my little prayer, and then I eat raisin bran and prunes for breakfast, and with lactose-free milk, and you know, and then my day starts. And it depends on where I am in the process of my life as to what I do. You know, when I was practicing medicine, I went to work and did that. But now I'm busy. I am talking to you. I'll be talking to somebody else this afternoon. And it's because I think that I still have a message. I know I still have a message to share with people, because people are scared and they're confused, and they're reaching for what I call our true humanity. Like E.T. was reaching for home. Within us is the real knowing of who we as human beings are, and we're trying to be that. And so if we can find ways in which we can understand this for ourselves, pay attention to your dreams. Pay attention to what, as far as what you eat, what is it that makes you feel good?
Oftentimes when people are trying to aim big and they think about all the complicated things they could do. And then I really think oftentimes it comes back down to that. Are you willing to outwork other people? It's a pretty powerful thing.
Yeah.
And even at this stage in your career, do you feel like you still have that drive to outwork other people?
Definitely. Like, of course, I've learned to work smarter, which sometimes means there are opportunities to save energy here and there, just to be able to perform even better on track. But you need to be in this sport, especially the way it's evolved in terms of technology and data. You have to prioritize things. And like, it's quite easy sport to overdo it as well. Like, you start overworking or overtrying. It's a fine line. So I think during my career, I've definitely learned that right balance.
I mean, you touch on Zuckerberg and kind of the early days of Facebook. Do you think he knew it back then? Like, if I can just do one thing, fantastic. Like, that's it. Was he that singular, that clear?
Yes. He is exceptionally gifted. People thinking, one, he's weird as hell. Let's acknowledge that. He did do other businesses. He also built Facebook in a weekend without investors, without all these things. So I want to encourage people that it's available and accessible worldwide for free, whether you're in India, South America, Austin, Texas, Barcelona, you know, Edmonton, doesn't matter. It's available. The thing that people miss out on, this is something that I had to learn through business coaches and my own business journey. His vision in the beginning wasn't to create a massive empire. It was like, I have a problem I want solved. Like, I'm lonely at Harvard. You know, like, I'm alone in my dorm room hoping to get a babe. That's real talk from him. He maybe not have said babe. He might have said a different word. And building a website very quickly, he copied someone else. He didn't even invent it, right? He copied the Winklevosses and did it in a weekend, launched it, sent an email to the mailing list, and it blew up. Now, as things get going, your vision should change, because things change. And so I think that's what's also impressive about him, was he did say, like, oh, I'm going to build this product, let me see what happens. And as it was working, he was very clear, and this was one of the most impressive and great learnings I've been able to take away from him, was like, as the business got going, about 1 or 2 years in, I joined 2005. He, at that point, when we had 10 million people, he's like, we're going to have 1 billion people on the site. We had 10 million. No one knew us. Everyone thought MySpace was going to crush us, which now it's kind of insane. No one even knows MySpace. But think about in your own life and your own businesses, like, what is the thing you're looking forward to and excited about? And it could even be small. Like, one of my phrases I like is, put it on the calendar. What's on the calendar? What are you looking forward to? And with AppSumo.com, we have this vision of distributing software tools specifically for entrepreneurs. I'm like, holy shit. People are like, you want to sell? I'm like, no, I've got some shit to do. It's on the calendar. And Zuckerberg had this vision at the same time, you know, 24. He's like, I'm going to connect 1 billion people in the years to come. And that's exciting. And that was the only thing we focused on. I was, you know, I'm a bootstrapper. I don't like investors. I don't want bosses. I don't want to have to, you know, do sales and things like that, because we, you know, just to get these people a return. At that time, he was very focused. And I went to him many times. I was like, can we please try to make money? Like, I built Facebook ads, I helped build Facebook mobile, I helped build Facebook status updates, which no one really wanted, which is now the main thing on Facebook and Twitter and all these sites. But what was fascinating is that at that time of making money, he's like, no, we just care about getting to 1 billion people. And that level of focus was so impressive, especially at 24. And I think that's something that we can all copy. Like, what's the one destination you're trying to get to? And when we drive, Tyler, like when we're driving in our daily lives, no one ever is like, I'm just going to drive and see where I end up. No, you're like, I got to go to the 7-Eleven or I got to go to the mall. I don't know. Why am I choosing old school stuff? I got to go to the taco store. I don't know. What do people go these days? I don't know. I got to go to the pickleball court.
You're speaking my language with malls. I mean, I'm 43, so you're right in the right wheelhouse.
Yeah. But the point is that when you're going somewhere in a car, you're like, of course I want a destination. Then why don't we replicate that in business? And Zuckerberg did. And that's what I do. And that seems to be the thing that works for specifically for business, probably also for life. Like, where do you want to end up and how do you work backwards from there?
And so a lot of times, you know, instead of just fear mongering, I just say, we have to get back to the basics, right? Aging is the aggressive pursuit of comfort. And we too aggressively pursue comfort nowadays. We have to stop telling grandma not to go outside, it's too hot, not to go outside, it's too cold, just to lay down, just to relax, to eat at the very first pang of hunger. This is just collapsing our natural defense mechanisms, right? And we have to understand that not all stress in the body is bad. In fact, a lot of stress is very good. There's a process in the body called hormesis, where if you actually stress it, it strengthens in a positive way. You know, remember, if you don't tear a muscle, it won't grow. If you don't load a bone, it will not strengthen. If you don't challenge the immune system, it will weaken. You know, you're seeing the results of this coming out of a global pandemic. I'm probably going to lose half your audience now by saying this next, but I'm going to say it because it's my position. You know, one of the worst things that we ever did was residential quarantining, masking, and social distancing. Because what this did was it took human beings out of contact with other human beings. And you're seeing the weakening of the immune system, a global collapse of the immune system. And now you hear all kinds of things. Monkeypox, eighth iteration of Omicron. We're on our sixth or seventh booster now. Why does the immune system need that much support? It's because we weakened it, right? So aging truly is the aggressive pursuit of comfort. And I believe that people need to get data on their bodies and then put a plan together for their body like they do their business. You know, it's interesting how many entrepreneurs I talk to. And sometimes when I'm on a stage talk, I'll invite a really successful entrepreneur up on stage and I'll sit down with them and I'll say, hey, how much money did your business make last month? Oh, $662,000. Wow. What was your net income? $148,400. How many employees do you have? 17. What's the revenue per employee? 71,200. What's your hemoglobin A1C? What are your testosterone? Where's your testosterone level? Do you know what your insulin is? No idea. Right? So we know more about our business than we know about our own biome, than we know about our own temple. And we think because we're young, we don't need data on our temple. That is not true. We should start to get data and gamify life.
It's so important for us to understand what we teach our children. And these are things that were really brought to me so that I could understand the kind of life that I was going to actually live. And so, yeah, I had the make do. I had to let go. I had to, my mother taught me how to not take things in and say that was horrible. I hurt my feelings. And I could just let it go and say, kuch parwane, it doesn't matter. The things that you accept and really understand to be the kind of the core. You know, I'm about 15, 20 years ago, I came up with a kind of a structure for philosophy that I was building and all. The first L was life and love. And those two came together, and I understood those. But the third one was laughter. Laughter without love is cruel. It's mean. It takes families apart. It has caused wars, you know. Laughter can be cruel. But laughter with love is joy and happiness. And the fourth L is labor. Labor without love is drudgery. It's you just gotta go to work. You just gotta do this. You know, too many diapers. But labor with love is bliss. It's why we sing. Why painters paint. It's why I do what I do. It's why you do what you do. It's what makes our hearts sing. It's that inner aspect of our being that comes alive. And we'll work five times as hard as we were when we were dragging ourselves along with the drudgery thing. And the fifth one is listening. Listening without love is empty sound. It just doesn't make any sense. You don't understand. But listening with love is understanding. So these five loves, these five L's have been very helpful for me in structuring and understanding the philosophy and the lives that I'm working with.
When you mentioned that at the center of holistic medicine or living medicine is love, and you describe these five L's, living, love, laughter, labor, and listening, and you kept relating it back to love. It really does feel like at the center of this philosophy is love.
Yes, yes, it really is.
When I was a test driver at Williams 2012, I was doing quite many of the Friday practice sessions, and that was the year that I had to prove myself in the practice session. Of course, trying to do the job for the team, you know, doing the right testing, but I had to try and be quicker than the race drivers. You know, that was my mission, and that worked. I managed to be quicker than the race drivers in most of the practice sessions as a complete rookie, and I think that was probably the most important year so far in my career.
Was that a bold move? Because in that year, like, I don't think you competed. You didn't race. You just did the practice. I mean, So when you were making that decision, what did that feel like at that time? Was that like, I'm rolling the dice? What did it feel like?
Yeah, for sure. I was still quite young at that age. And of course, there was pressure because I knew that, yeah, this is the year. I'm not racing anything. Everyone who was competing the year before were still racing in some other categories, gaining more experience. And it was like, this has to work. Otherwise, it's going to be quite unlikely that I will make it to Formula One. So, there was for sure pressure. Every time jumping in the car in the practice session or test, I knew that, yeah, now I have to show what I can do. And I'm glad I did. Hmm.
And what did that, like, you had to find a way look like? Was it, you know, just spend extra time? Was it meet with more people? Was it study the sport? Like, what did it actually look like?
So I started as a junior driver for Williams already in 2010 when I was doing Formula 3. That's when I moved to UK, close to the Williams factory. And I was basically outside from my Formula 3 racing, I was every day at the factory. I learned actually how the whole factory works, how every bit of the car is built. I was working in all the different departments of the team for a couple of years, and just learning and spending lots of time in the simulator. Then 2012, coming to every single Grand Prix, obviously. And yeah, that was, at that point, I had nothing else pretty much in life than Formula One because I had this mission.
You spoke about 40-year-old Noah. What about 20-year-old Noah? Like, what advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Yeah. Hey there, little buddy. A few things. I would focus a lot more on positive self-talk. I was very externally validating, like, Facebook fired me. I'm so angry. I suck. These guys are better. I'm never going to make it. How am I going to get rich? I'm not rich yet. Everyone else is rich. So I really would have liked more optimism and just positive self-talk. And how you can do that now is that anytime you criticize yourself, say a positive thing. This is borrowed from my buddy Tynan, and he's something I've worked on by 40. So if you're like, oh, I sucked at this thing, why don't you, so you could say that. That's good to say. Fine. The next thing you say is, oh, I'm learning. That's okay. You're learning. Hey, you didn't do a good job at that. Okay, well, I can do better next time. Great. Just more. And you do that over time and time again. That builds up your self-confidence and your self-worth. So that would be number one. See, number two would be patience and optimism. Again, optimism. So just patience. All these cliches are so true. Like, oh, the destination, not the journey. You know, don't worry about them. And I was like, shut up, dude. I'm poor and I want to get rich. So I don't care about your shitty journey. And I made it much harder on myself and more frustrating when that is the whole experience. The whole experience is the journey. And so I would have liked to have been, hey, you have a vision, you have optimism that it'll work out. You're talking positively. Let's be patient that you will get there. And I do think I ended up at a similar destination regardless, but I definitely made it a lot more unsatisfactory along the way. I think the last thing I would tell myself is, and this is probably more surprising as well, is the importance of partner selection. So your mate selection specifically. I never took myself very seriously, and I never took that seriously as well, where I just dated whatever I got. I didn't dated what I wanted. And so I wasted a lot of time around that. So for 20-year-old Noah, talk more positive to yourself, be patient and be optimistic around the future that'll work out, and be more intentional about what you want and who you're dating. I think I would just be like, oh, you'll date me? Sure, I'll take it. Please don't leave me. And then as I got older, I was like, what do I really want? What am I getting? And the best way to get what you want, you got to ask.
If I took the advice that I'm about to give, I probably wouldn't be where I am. So it's kind of a conundrum because, you know, I was very inauthentic for many, many years of my life. I really desperately wanted to be wealthy. It's really all I wanted to do is to get rich. I was making decent money in the insurance industry. I was not in the service of humanity. I was in the service of myself. And I was predicting when people were going to die, not helping people live healthier, happier, longer lives. And it wasn't until that massive Perry Mason moment in my life where I just said, what the hell am I doing? I'm not going to spend one more minute of my life predicting when people are going to die. I'm going to spend the balance of my lifetime helping people live healthier, happier, longer lives. And ironically, it was at that moment that I stopped thinking about being wealthy and I started thinking about other people's well-being. And the more I delved myself into other people's well-being, the wealthier I became. And so that was a really hard journey for me. I feel like I have a huge hole to fill because I spent an enormous amount of my adult lifetime not in service of humanity, not really making a difference, not really creating any kind of legacy, not really making any kind of impact. But at the same time, I guess it was that education during that 22 years that really allows me to be in service now. And so I would say, you know, the greatest moment in life for me came when I realized that I would otherwise do this for free, and now I've somehow monetized it. And the amount of humility that comes from that and the lack of my pursuit of money any longer and the absolute passion I have for what I do, I don't mean to sound altruistic, but, you know, it's like when the purpose is bigger than any problem, life becomes very easy. And so, you know, a lot of times when I wake up, I don't know if it's gratitude or prayer, but I thank God and I'm like, I don't want anything else. Like, if you just keep it right here, right? I don't want any more money. I don't need any more exposure. I don't need any more strokes on the back. Like I absolutely love the lane that my life is in. I have no aches and pains. I feel great. You know, I'm thinking clearly. I know that I'm making an impact.
I think about, if I kind of think about some of the audience that watches our videos, 20-year-olds that would be feeling a lot of the emotions that you've described. You know, they're excited about a life that's ahead of them, but they're scared. They may be holding on to scars that have come from some part of their upbringing. What advice do you have for people who are about 20 years old right now?
Try to find joy and happiness. Find something that makes you laugh. Really gutted laugh. Not something mean, but something that really makes you feel like, oh, that's really, really funny. And look for that kind of reality in your lives. And then spend time looking for what I call the light. You know, I kind of see myself walking along with a flashlight in the dark on my path, and it's dark, and I can just go as far as my flashlight takes me. But as I'm walking along, sometimes there's on the side of the path, there's a light that is not very bright. It's just kind of shimmering. If I shine my light over there, all of a sudden that light becomes great. It comes. In other words, as we reach out for each other, as we're walking along and we see someone else who's struggling, and we reach over just with whatever we have. You know, my mother's make do. Whatever there is there, whatever the opportunity is, and you use it, and you work forward with it, you're helping people in ways that you know not.
I hope 20-year-olds can hear that. I hope a lot of others can hear that too.